2 minutes ago, I'd been higher than high, which made the fast crash hit me hard. What am I doing? Sure, Drew was sexy, and I was physically attracted to him. There was no denying that. But this was a mistake. We wanted different things out of life. The fact that I enjoyed his company and spent every day with him would make it very difficult to separate sex and feelings. He was like a drug. I knew I shouldn't, but the addiction formed quickly. I was on the bottom button when Drew came back to the office. The UPS guy thinks I was jerking off. What? Why? He had a package for you and asked if you were here. I didn't want him to ask for you to sign for it, so I said no, it was just me today. So? How does that equate to him thinking you were masturbating? When he went to hand me the electronic signature pad, I noticed his eyes latched onto this.
Drew pointed down. He had a considerable bulge, and you could actually see the outline of his penis pointing up through his pants. His zipper was also open, and part of his shirt tail was hanging out of it. I clasped my hand over my mouth and giggled. Oh, my God! Then I took a second look at his pants. Oh, my God! Drew's penis was so wide and long it looked like he was carrying a wiffle ball bat. I hadn't realized how long I'd been staring until Drew chuckled.
Stop looking at it like that, or I'm not going to be polite and let you take it a little at a time when you're sucking it in a little while.
God, he's so crass. God, I want to suck that thing.
I shook my head and forced my eyes back up to meet Drew's. His were dancing in amusement. Anything you need to do before we go upstairs?
Upstairs?
To my place. I want to make sure the first time I'm inside of you, we have no interruptions.
But I don't think...
Drew quieted me before I could finish my sentence by pressing his lips to mine. When we came up for air, I was dizzy. He looked me in the eyes. Don't think. Not today. Think tomorrow. If you want this to be a one-time thing, I'll accept that. But today is happening.
My brain screamed no, but my head nodded. He smiled.
Okay.
Okay.
He fished in his pocket and came up with his keys. Take your laptop and phone. Go upstairs to my place and cancel whatever you have the rest of the day. I'll do the same and be up in 15 minutes.
Why can't we both do that down here?
Because I have a giant hard-on, and seeing you in my shirt is not going to help that at all. It's bad enough that the way you come undone when you come is already burned into my brain. I need to get things under control so I don't embarrass myself.
Oh. He grinned.
Yeah. Oh.
Then he kissed me on the lips chastely and sent me on my way with a swat on the ass.
Go.
Chapter 24.
I didn't have anything sexy to wear, so I did the best I could. Putting off making my client calls, I first did a quick fix on my must hair and makeup. Luckily, I was wearing a cute black lace bra and matching G-string, so I slipped off my skirt and chose to wait for Drew wearing just his dress shirt, which I unbuttoned a bit to expose the lace of my bra. Satisfied with how I looked, I went to the living room to call up my calendar on my laptop and start canceling my patients for the afternoon. I was looking out the window, in the middle of my last call, when I heard the front door unlock. The calm I'd allowed to seep in as I worked to reschedule my patients was suddenly chased away by a swarm of butterflies in my belly. Tess McArdle was in the middle of a story about her recent doctor's appointment, totally unrelated to our counseling, and I thought it best not to turn around and look at Drew. I was already having a hard time keeping up with my end of the conversation, now that the lock had clanked open on the front door. I couldn't take my eyes off of Drew's reflection in the window. He set his keys down on the counter, emptied his pockets, slipped something I suspected might be a condom out of his wallet, and walked up behind me. His eyes never left the glass the entire time. I did my best at getting Mrs. McArdle off the phone, but she wasn't taking the hint. Drew was close enough that I could feel the heat from his body at my back, but he didn't touch me. Instead, he began to undress. First the shirt. His chest was so sculpted and beautiful,
I could see all the tiny lines chiseled into his abdomen. If he looked this good in a window reflection, I couldn't even imagine how insanely gorgeous he was going to be when I looked directly at him. Next came the shoes and socks, and then the pants. My eyes were glued to his fingers as they quickly worked the button and zipper, and his slacks fell to the floor. He stepped out and kicked them to the side. I held my breath when his fingers went to the waistband of his boxer briefs and let out an audible gasp when he promptly pulled them down his legs.
"Emery? Are you there? Are you all right?"
Shit, shit. I hadn't heard a word Mrs. McArdle had said for the last minute, and she'd heard me gasp.
"Yes, I'm sorry, Mrs. McArdle," I said, completely flustered. A giant spider just crawled onto my desk and startled me."
Drew smirked at me in the reflection. He was enjoying himself. Maybe a little too much. Taking his cock in his hand, he began to stroke himself as he stared at me.
"Mrs. McArdle, I'm sorry, I really need to run. Someone is going to be coming in any moment."
Drew leaned in and kissed my neck, whispering in the ear not pressed to the phone.
"Oh, someone's about to come in, all right."
He slipped his hand under the back of the shirt and palmed my ass.
"I'm going to fuck you up against this window."
I clenched my thighs, but it didn't do a damn thing to stop the swelling between my legs. When his hand at my ass slipped between my thighs and rubbed my wetness from my lips up to my ass, my legs started to tremble. Was he planning on putting that enormous thing in there? I'd never done that before, and I wasn't so sure about starting with that giant thing. He continued to massage me, spreading my wetness all over. By the time I finally got Mrs. McArdle off the phone, I was more lubricated than when I took care of myself and actually used lubricant. I let my cell drop to the floor, not caring if it cracked in the process, and leaned back against Drew as he slipped two fingers inside of me.
"So wet and ready."
His voice was so low and gravelly, I was seriously getting off on him speaking. His words, the tone, the way he wasn't asking, but telling me what he was going to do.
"I love your body."
I loved the way he made me feel. Can people see in? I was barely coherent, but when I forced my eyes open, I could see people on the street. Granted, they were far away, but still. His fingers continued to glide in and out of me.
"Does it matter? If there was a chance someone would see, would you tell me to stop right now?"
I answered honestly. "No." I wouldn't tell him to stop if we had a full audience watching, waiting to hold up signs and rate our performance. I was too far gone for that.
"Good."
His fingers momentarily pulled out of me, and before I understood what was going on, Drew was ripping open my shirt. Well, technically they were his shirt buttons pinging off the glass. "Do you have something against buttons?"
"I have something against you wearing clothes."
Somehow he managed to remove his shirt and my bra and panties in record time, and then my warm body was up against the cold glass of the windows.
"Maybe they can see you down there."
He slid a hand between my breast and the glass and pinched one of my nipples.
"Maybe there's a man in one of those buildings over there."
He jerked his chin to the buildings diagonally across from us, lining the other side of the park.
"He's watching us with binoculars and stroking his cock, pretending he's in front of you while I'm behind you."
Oh, God. The window was so cold, and my body was on fire. Drew sucked along my shoulder, working his way up my neck, eventually reaching my ear.
"Spread for me, Em."
I would have jumped out the window if he'd instructed me to at that point. I widened my stance, opening my legs, and Drew wrapped one arm around my waist, hitching my ass up toward him and forcing my back to arch while my breasts stayed pressed against the glass. Then he grabbed his cock, sheathed it, and dipped down to gently guide himself into me. He pushed in and out a few times, each thrust going deeper until he was fully inside. I'd never been with a man who was so thick, and each stroke coaxed my body to wrap around him like a glove.
"Fuck, you feel so good. Your tight little pussy is squeezing me so hard. You want me to fill you up, don't you? Your body wants to suck the cum from my cock.
Jesus, I loved his dirty mouth. I moaned and pushed back against him, taking him even deeper. Yes, Drew, please. The apartment was quiet, except for the noise of our wet bodies slapping against each other. It seemed to echo all around us. The exquisite sound must have made him as frenzied as it made me, because Drew began to thrust harder and deeper. Each grunt he made as he slammed into me sent my body closer to the edge. My eyes had been closed as I lost myself in the pleasure of my body, but when I opened them, they locked with Drew's in the reflection, and that pushed me over. I came long and hard, never breaking eye contact as I moaned through it.
"Fuck, you're beautiful,"
Drew muttered as he gave one last deep thrust, and then I felt a pulsating sensation inside of me as he spurted hot cum and told me over and over how beautiful I was. He slowed to a languid pace after that, eventually pulling out of me so he could deal with the condom. When he returned, I was still stuck in place at the window, and he surprised me by scooping me up into his arms. "What are you doing?"
"Taking you to bed."
I lolled my head against his shoulder. "I am exhausted." Drew smirked.
"I'm not talking about going to sleep. I'm talking about fucking you properly next time."
"Properly?" I croaked out.
"Yeah, I need about 10 minutes. But I can't wait to take my time and watch your face as you come undone in my bed."
10 minutes? I might have needed a few hours myself. Drew chuckled and kissed my forehead.
"We'll take a bath after round two. How does that sound?"
"Heavenly. You're going to withhold that bathtub if I'm too exhausted for round two?"
"Don't worry. I'll do all the work. You can just lie back, enjoy my tongue, and dream about that bath."
"And to think I said no to all of this yesterday."
"That'll be the last time you say no to me."
"Is that so?"
"You bet your damn ass. Now that I know how good we are together, you can say no, but I won't be taking it for an answer." I left a mark.
Drew cupped a handful of warm water and let it dribble down in big drops onto my protruding nipple. I was nestled between his legs as we soaked in the bathtub together. "Where?"
"Here."
He pointed to a red mark I hadn't noticed on my breast. "That's okay. Probably no one will see it." He stiffened.
"Probably."
"I mean, it will be covered by my bra, so even if I undress for someone, like in a fitting room or at the doctor, they probably won't see it anyway."
"So you're not planning on fucking someone else before it wears off?"
I tilted my head to look up at him. "Is this more than a one-time thing?" Drew searched my eyes.
"It is."
"Okay, then. No one else will be seeing my marked skin, so we don't have to worry about it." His jaw relaxed.
"Good. Because that's not the only mark I left."
"What? Where else?"
"Here."
He touched a spot on my collarbone.
"Here."
He pointed to a spot just below my ear.
"And I'm pretty sure you're going to find a few more on the inside of your thighs."
I laughed. "Those I definitely didn't mind. But you can't leave hickeys on my neck where patients can see them. Most of them are going through a hard time in their relationships, and they shouldn't have to stare at proof that I'm out having a good time at night."
"Got it. I'll limit my marking to your tits, thighs, pussy, and ass."
"You have a dirty mouth, you know that?" He pinched my nipple.
"You didn't seem to mind it when I was inside of you."
"Yeah, well," I had nothing to say since he was right. I also felt my cheeks heating. Drew chuckled.
"You've ridden my face, and my saying tits and pussy still makes you blush."
"Shut up!" I splashed water up at him. Drew flicked on the jets, and I relaxed into his arms, enjoying the water massage. The whirling sound was white noise and had a calming effect on me. Although I'd had something on my mind the last hour, and I couldn't shake it. After a while, the jets powered down, and I got up my nerve. "Can I ask you something?"
"Your ass is pressed up against my balls. I'm guessing it's not a question I'm going to want to answer if you waited until now to ask it.
Such a wise ass. I asked anyway. What happened in your marriage that you wound up divorced?
He sighed. You're already getting pruny. Sure you want to hear it? You might look 90 by the time I'm done unloading all the shit that went down with Alexa.
Alexa. I hated her already, just from her name. Give me the short version.
Met her my last year in college. Got pregnant after 3 months of sleeping together.
He has a child? Wow, so you got married?
Yeah. Wasn't the smartest decision, in retrospect. But she seemed sweet, and was going to have my baby. She'd also lived a very different lifestyle than I had, growing up with money. So I wanted to provide for her and my child.
That's very noble of you.
I think you're confusing noble with naive.
Not at all. I think it's incredible that you wanted to make sure they had a good life.
Yeah, well, long story short, she wasn't the sweet person she pretended to be in the beginning. But I kept trying for a long time.
What finally pushed you to end it?
Drew was quiet for a long moment. When he spoke again, his voice cracked.
It ended the night she got into an accident with my son in the car.
Chapter 25. New Year's Eve, 3 years ago. I stared at the cross on my son's wall. It had inspired me to pray exactly a year ago. The crib I'd hung it over was gone, upgraded to a plastic toddler bed in the shape of a race car. But I'd rehung the cross after God dropped me an early hint that I was shit out of luck wishing for my dad's health. He died 3 days ago. After the service this morning, a few people had come back to our place for lunch. I was grateful they were all gone now. I needed the silence. I also wanted to have a few drinks in peace. I swirled amber liquid around in my glass. The door creaked open, but I didn't bother to turn around. Arms wrapped around my waist from behind and hands clasped together, covering my belt buckle in the front.
What are you doing in here? Beck is at play place with the sitter. He won't be back for another hour or two.
Nothing.
Come out to the living room. Let me rub your shoulders.
The last year between Alexa and me had been tough. It's not that we argued that much, but the novelty had long since worn off of our relationship. We had three things in common. We both liked sex. Money, I earned it, she spent it, and our son. But when you're working 10 hours a day and then nights and weekends you're taking care of your father who is literally dying before your eyes, even sex takes a back seat. Before my father started to decline so fast, I'd tried to take an interest in my wife's new hobbies, give us something more in common. But other than attending a play one of her classes was putting on, it wasn't easy. I ran lines with her, but she told me I didn't put enough heart into my acting. That was probably because I wasn't a damn actor. I went to watch her play practices, and she told me my presence made her think too much about her performance. Eventually, I gave up trying. Though the last few days, she'd been absolutely incredible. I turned around and held my wife, kissing the top of her head. Yeah, let's go. My shoulders are knotted. I'd like that. After about 15 minutes, I'd started to relax. Until Alexa brought the tension back into my neck.
We should go to Sage's party tonight.
I buried my father 2 hours ago. The only parent I had, considering my mother took off with her boyfriend when I was only a little older than our son. I'm not really in the mood for a party.
But it's our anniversary, and it's New Year's Eve.
Alexa, I'm not going to a fucking party tonight, all right? She stopped rubbing.
You don't have to be a jerk about it.
I sat up. A jerk? You expect me to go to a party on the day of my father's funeral? I don't think I'm the one acting like a jerk. My wife huffed. Our 5-year age difference felt more like 20 sometimes.
I need a party. The last few months have been depressing.
It wasn't like she'd helped me with my father or anything. Every weekend while I was taking care of him, she was out with her friends, usually shopping or having lunch God knows where. Her selfishness had finally gotten to me. Which part of the last few months was depressing? Living on Park Avenue and spending thousands on shopping every week? Or maybe it was the nanny who watched our son so you could take acting classes and go out to lunch? How about the three-week-long trips you took back to Atlanta to visit your immature friends? The ones where you flew first class and stayed at the St. Regis downtown instead of your brother's double-wide in the sticks? That must have been depressing. My friends are not immature. I scoffed and went to reply, but decided I'd rather have another drink than continue this conversation. Out of everything I'd said, what hurt her feelings was that her friends were immature. She had a warped fucking sense of priority. I walked to the kitchen, which was open to the living room where she still sat, and poured myself another drink. Go to the party by yourself, Alexa. The sun was setting by the time I opened my eyes. Alexa had taken Beck to the mall to shop for yet another dress, and I'd passed out on the couch after finishing my drink and the argument with her. Sitting up, I ran my fingers through my hair. I shouldn't have been surprised that Alexa had planned to go to a party tonight. God forbid she miss a party, especially New Year's Eve. I'd given her more credit than she deserved in the selflessness department, apparently. My stomach growled. I couldn't remember the last time I'd actually eaten. Yesterday, maybe? Dinner at that Italian place in between the morning and afternoon wake sessions at the funeral parlor, I think. Rummaging through the refrigerator, I took out the platter we'd ordered for this morning and picked at the antipasto with my fingers. As I was stuffing my face, my cell phone started to ring, and at first I ignored it. But after it immediately began ringing again, I reached over to check the caller ID. It was a local number, one that was very familiar. By the third ring, my brain had searched my internal phone book and finally recalled why I knew it. I'd dialed it off and on for the last few months, each time my father's health took a turn for the worse. Lenox Hill Hospital was calling. The cab driver screamed at me as I bolted toward the emergency room entrance. Apparently I'd gotten out in such a rush I'd forgotten to close the car door. My wife and son were in a car accident. They were brought in by ambulance. I yelled through a round hole to the woman behind thick plexiglass. Last name? Jagger. She looked up and perked one eyebrow. Those lips, I have to ask. Any relation to Mick? No. She made a face, but pointed at a door to my left. Room 1A. I'll buzz you back. Blunt abdominal trauma. That's what the doctor had told us 2 hours ago. Alexa had needed a few stitches in her head. But Beck wasn't as lucky. His car seat had felt the full impact of the collision when a floral delivery van lost its brakes and ran a red light into moving cross-town traffic. He'd swerved to try to avoid the crash, but ended up colliding with the back driver's side of Alexa's car, exactly where Beck had been sitting. The doctors had assured us his injuries didn't appear to be life-threatening, but an ultrasound showed there was damage to his left kidney, at least a small nick that needed to be repaired right away. I was now waiting for the nurses to bring me consent forms for surgery. Beck slept peacefully as I sat by his bedside. Alexa was getting another neurological exam in the room next to us. After the doctor came in and told me the risks of the procedure, the nurse brought me in a stack of forms to fill out. Medical consent, Privacy Act, insurance authorizations. The last form was for directed blood transfusions. The nurse explained that there wasn't time before Beck's surgery to collect blood from us, so in the off chance he needed blood, he'd be given blood from the blood bank. However, we could donate our blood and store it for him for future use, if necessary. I filled out the form to get typed and cross-matched while we waited, and asked the nurse to have Alexa sign everything next door. I didn't want to leave Beck alone in case he woke up. The next few hours were hell while my son was in surgery. It took 2 hours for the assistant surgeon to come out and speak with us. He pulled a paper mask down. Things aren't quite as simple as we'd initially thought. The damage to your son's kidney was more extensive than the CT showed. Right now we're attempting to repair the laceration, but the tear is surrounding the vascular pedicle, which contains the arteries and veins that connect it to the aorta. I need you to understand that there's a chance we won't be able to make the repair well enough to safely leave the kidney inside your son's body. If that's the case, he'll need to undergo a partial or full nephrectomy. He attempted to convince us that having one kidney was perfectly fine. I knew plenty of people only had one, but if we were born with two, I wanted my son to get the benefit of both, if at all possible. Alexa and I had barely talked, other than my making sure she was okay. I was focused on Beck, and part of me blamed her for the accident. Not that it was her fault, but if she hadn't been so concerned with buying another damn dress to go out tonight, none of this would have happened. I saw a machine down by the elevators. You want some coffee? Alexa nodded. When I returned with two coffees, the nurse was already talking to Alexa. Oh, Mr. Jagger, here's your blood card. It has your type on it, if you should ever need it. We give it to everyone we run for blood donations. Thank you. Am I a compatible donor with Beck? Let me see his chart. She walked to the foot of the bed where a metal chart was hanging. As she flipped through pages, she said, You're type O negative, so that means you can give blood to anyone. She stopped at a pink page. You're lucky. It's not often a stepfather is a universal donor. I'm his father, not his stepfather. The nurse hung Beck's chart back on the bed's footrail and returned to the clipboard she'd brought in with her. A look of bewilderment crossed her face. You're type O. Beckett is AB. She frowned. You're saying Beckett is your biological son? Yes. She looked to Alexa and then to me, shaking her head. That's not possible. An O can't genetically make a child with type AB blood. I was exhausted from one hell of a day, between burying my father and my wife and child getting into an accident. I had to have misunderstood. The lab made a mistake then. The nurse shook her head. They're usually pretty good. She looked back and forth between me and my wife again. But I'll have them come up and draw a fresh sample. After that, she practically ran out of the room. I turned to look at my wife, whose head was hanging down. This is a mistake in the lab, right, Alexa? I almost vomited when she looked up. She didn't have to say a goddamn word for me to know. There was no mistake. No fucking mistake. Beck wasn't my son.
Chapter 26. You have a son? I craned my neck back to look at Drew. We were still in the bathtub, and it wasn't easy to maneuver much sitting between his legs. Drew nodded with his eyes closed before opening them to look at me. There was so much pain in his expression. My stomach dropped in anticipation of what was to come next.
It's a long story. How about we get out, and I'll make you something to eat while I explain.
Okay. Drew got out first to get us towels. After he dried off, including a 3-second rub of the towel to his hair, he wrapped it around his waist and offered me a hand. His face was still contemplative, and I wanted to lighten the mood for him. Whatever he was going to tell me about his son clearly wasn't an easy story. I took his hand and stepped out of the tub. You look like you could film a shaving cream commercial right now, and I probably look like a wet rat. My hair was stuck to my face, and I was glad the mirror was fogged with steam so I couldn't get a good look at my reflection. Drew reached around me with a plush bath towel and began to dry me off. You provide nice primping services, I teased as he reached down to dry one leg and then the other. He winked.
It goes with my prodding service.
Your prodding was pretty damn spectacular, too.
I'm a full-service type of guy.
When he was all done drying my body, my boobs and between my legs were extra dry from all the time he spent there. Drew wrapped the towel around my chest and tucked it in at the corner. His sweet side was still on display when he tangled our fingers together for the walk from the bathroom. In the kitchen, he pulled a stool out from under the granite island and patted the top.
Have a seat.
I swiveled around on it a few times as Drew pulled things out of the cabinets and refrigerator. Remembering what we'd done up against the glass a few hours ago, I stopped twirling and looked at the window. It was dark outside now, and I could see the lights from the city illuminated so clearly. Can they really see inside? A mixture of panic and embarrassment crept up my cheeks as I remembered how my breasts had been pushed up against the glass. In the moment, it had seemed exciting that someone could possibly see, added to the eroticism. But I definitely didn't want to wind up on YouTube because some creeper had filmed us through a telescope. Drew chuckled.
No, it's one-way glass. I wouldn't put you at risk like that.
He reached over my head to grab a pan and kissed my forehead on his way down with it.
Plus, I don't share things that are mine.
The first part of his response made the rational part of me breathe a sigh of relief, but the latter gave me warm fuzzies inside. Drew was also still wearing just a towel, his wrapped around his narrow waist, and I was enjoying the view of his back muscles flexing as he chopped an onion, when I noticed a scar. It ran diagonally along the side of his torso, extending from the front to the back. The mark was faded to a lighter shade of tan than the rest of his skin. Definitely not new, but something serious had happened.
"Did you have surgery?" I asked.
"Hmm?"
Drew dropped some butter into the frying pan and turned with brows drawn. I pointed.
"Your scar."
A flicker of something passed over his face. Sadness, I thought. He turned back around as he responded.
"Yeah, surgery a few years back."
Maybe I was looking too much into things, scrutinizing everything he did, but I couldn't help it. My mind was trying to put together a puzzle without knowing what the picture looked like. Drew chopped up a bunch of other things, refusing to let me help. When he plated two gorgeous Western omelets, they looked like they could have been made at one of Baldwin's fancy restaurants. Baldwin. I couldn't waste another 3 years pining for a man who was never going to return my feelings. I needed to remember that Drew wasn't interested in more than sex. Getting attached and growing feelings for this man was not an option. Yet, I couldn't help feeling some sort of connection to Drew, like there was a reason I got ripped off and wound up sitting in his office on New Year's Eve. Stupid, I know. I had no idea what the connection between us was just yet, but I was determined to find out. We made small talk throughout our meal, and then I cleaned up. There weren't enough dishes to run the dishwasher, so I washed while Drew dried. The two of us worked well together. And I found myself thinking it was interesting how, in the office, our opinions and counsel were so opposite, yet physically, we were so in sync.
"You want a drink? Glass of wine or something?"
he asked when the kitchen was put back together neatly.
"No, thanks. I'm too full."
He nodded.
"Come on. Let's go sit in the living room."
Drew moved the pillows on the couch around, putting one at the end for my head, then pointed.
"Lie down."
He stood until I got myself comfortable. Then he lifted my legs and set my feet across his lap.
"You ticklish."
"Are you going to make it a challenge if I tell you I'm not?" He flashed me a crooked smile.
"No, I was going to rub your feet."
I smiled and lifted one of my feet in the air, offering it to him.
"I'm not ticklish.
But when you admit that to people, they find it necessary to dig their fingers into your ribs until you bruise, trying to prove you're wrong." Drew took my foot and began to rub. His fingers were strong, and when he took his thumbs and deftly rubbed at a spot on the ball of my foot, the spot where my heels placed most of my body weight, I let out a little mewl.
"Good?"
"Better than good," I sighed. After a few minutes of his rubbing, my entire body relaxed, and Drew started to speak in a low voice.
"Beck was 5 years old when he got into an accident with my ex-wife."
"Oh, God. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry." Drew's brow furrowed, and then he quickly seemed to realize what I thought.
"Oh, shit. No, I didn't mean to make you think. He's fine. Beck's fine."
My hand went to my chest. "Jesus, you scared the crap out of me. I thought..."
"Yeah, I realize that now. Sorry. He's fine. It was scary for a while after the accident, but now you wouldn't even know he went through 3 surgeries.
3 surgeries? What happened to him?"
"A delivery van creamed Alexa's car, and it crumpled into a V around the van."
"That's horrible."
"Beck's booster seat and part of the car door cut into his side, lacerating his kidney. Surgeons tried to repair it,
but because of the location and size of the tear, they had to remove part of it. The day of his accident, he had a partial nephrectomy on his left kidney.
Wow, I'm sorry.
Thank you. He took a minute and then continued. While he was in surgery, the nurses offered to have us donate blood. I felt helpless, and I wanted to do whatever I could.
Of course.
Anyway, they ran a type and cross-match blood test on both me and Alexa to see if we were a match to donate and store blood for Beck. Turned out neither of us was.
I didn't realize two parents could have a child they couldn't donate blood to.
Drew leveled me with a look.
They can't.
It took a few heartbeats for me to realize what he was saying.
You found out Beck isn't your son.
He nodded.
I was there for the delivery, so I was damn sure he was Alexa's biological child.
I don't know what to say. That's awful. Did she know you weren't the father?
She knew. She won't admit it, but she knew from the start. Beck was born a few weeks early. I didn't think anything of it.
He shook his head.
If it wasn't for the surgery, I might never have found out.
God, Drew. You found out while he was in surgery. Talk about stress on top of stress.
Yeah, it wasn't a good day. Turned out it was one of many not-so-good days to come. The next few weeks got even worse.
What happened?
Alexa and I were over before I even left the hospital that night. The truth is, we were over a long time before the accident. But Beck and I...
Drew turned his head for a few seconds, and I watched as he swallowed. I knew he was fighting back tears. He still had my feet in his hands, but he had stopped moving. I had no idea what I was supposed to say or do, but I wanted to offer what comfort I could. So I sat up and crawled into his lap. Wrapping myself around his body, I gave him the biggest hug I could possibly give. After a few minutes, I pulled back and spoke quietly.
You don't have to tell me anymore.
Another time, maybe? Drew gave me a small smile.
That day changed the way I felt about Alexa. But it didn't change anything I felt about Beck. He was still my son.
Of course.
Anyway, a few days after Beck's surgery, he sprang a fever. His wound was healing, but he seemed to be getting sicker again. They put him on IV antibiotics to treat a possible surgery-related infection, but they didn't help. The doctors ended up having to open him back up and remove the portion of the kidney they'd left in. And in the meantime, the other kidney had started to show signs of having trouble functioning. It's actually not uncommon after one kidney is removed, or partially removed, for the other to have difficulty working properly for a while.
The poor baby. He must have been in so much pain. A car accident, surgery, starting to heal, and then more surgery?
Drew blew out a deep breath.
The days where he would get upset were actually more comforting than the days he was too weak to do anything. Looking at your child lying there and not being able to help is the worst feeling in the world.
I can't even imagine it.
After another week, things weren't getting much better. The infection had cleared, but the other kidney still wasn't functioning great. They started him on dialysis, which made him feel better, and he got healthier, but they also started to talk about putting him on a donor list if his function testing got any lower. People spend years on that list waiting. And taking a 5-year-old who feels otherwise healthy for hours of dialysis every other day was tough. So I had them test me for a match. And amazingly enough, even though I wasn't his biological father, my kidney was a good match. When he was healthy enough for more surgery, I donated one of my kidneys, which they transplanted to the left side where they'd removed the damaged kidney. That way he'd have 2 full kidneys, and if his other one didn't ever fully kick back in, he had double the chance of one of them working, at least.
I remembered Drew's back. That's what the scar is from?
He nodded. To make an already long story a little less long, the transplant was a success, and his other kidney kicked in and started functioning again a few weeks later. He's as healthy as a horse now, but it was scary as hell at the time.
The entire story was so much to take in. I had so many thoughts, but one of them was more prominent than the others. You're a beautiful man, Drew Jagger, and I don't mean on the outside. I leaned down and trailed a line of kisses from one end of his scar to the other.
You only think that because I skipped the part where I packed up Alexa's shit and moved it while she wasn't home,
he teased, although I could tell he wasn't joking. She deserved it. I would have cut holes in the crotches of all of her pants, the stupid bitch. Drew pulled his head back, his face amused.
Is that the relationship advice you would have given me if I'd shown up at your office seeking counseling?
I thought for a minute. What would I have done? I only work with couples that genuinely want to make it work. If I'd heard your story, saw the look in your eyes, I wouldn't have taken you as a client, because I'd basically be giving the party who wanted to make it work false hope in that case. Not to mention it would be wrong to take money to do something I knew was never going to happen.
Has that happened to you before? Have you had clients where one wants it to work and not the other?
It has. It's not uncommon, actually. I have separate sessions in the beginning so the parties can say things freely without worrying about hurting the other person's feelings. I find I get more truth in those sessions than anything else. When I first started, I had a couple that had been married for 27 years, a wealthy, very social couple with two grown daughters. The man was gay and living a life he felt he was supposed to live after growing up with ultra-conservative, religious parents. It took him until he was 52, but he came out of the closet to his wife and told her they should separate. He felt terrible and had been staying because he loved her, just not in the way a husband should love his wife. I wound up counseling them to separate and helping her get through it.
Shit. Wish we'd been sharing space back then. I could have gotten her a nice settlement,
Drew joked. I shoved at his chest. Thought you only represented men.
How rich were they? I might have made an exception.
I laughed. Why do you only represent men? Because of what your ex-wife did to you? Drew shook his head.
Nah. Just do better with men.
His answer was vague, and I had the feeling he was reluctant to answer. I squinted. Give me the real reason, Jagger. He searched my eyes.
You might not want to hear it.
Well, now I'm curious, so whether I want to hear it or not, you have to tell me. Drew's jaw flexed.
Angry fucking.
Pardon?
When I represented women who were pissed off and angry, they wanted to get even.
So they were bitter. That's normal in a divorce. Drew looked embarrassed.
They wanted to get even with their husbands, with me.
You slept with your clients?
I'm not proud of it now, but yes. I was recently divorced and angry myself. Angry fucking can do a lot to help you temporarily release that rage.
Isn't having sex with your clients against some lawyer rules or something?
Like I said, they weren't my finest moments.
I could tell Drew wasn't just saying he was embarrassed. He really regretted the way he'd acted, and he'd been truthful with me when he could have lied. It wasn't my place to judge his past. I'd rather judge him for the honesty he was showing me today. Angry sex, huh? I tried to hide my smile. He gave a slight nod and watched me cautiously. Well, I think you're a womanizing, egotistical, self-centered jerk. Drew pulled his head back.
What the fuck? You wanted me to be honest.
I didn't think you would honestly be an asshole. He was just about to respond again when I leaned close to him and cracked a sneaky smile.
Did I make you angry? Are you trying to make me angry?
I've heard angry fucking can do a lot to help you temporarily release that rage. Before I knew what was happening, Drew had lifted me into the air and flipped me flat on my back on the couch. He hovered over me.
Nice. Then I'm glad I piss you off daily. We'll need a lot of work on our anger issues.
Chapter 27. New Year's Eve, 2 years ago. Judges hate hearing cases on New Year's Eve, but I knew what my ex-wife was up to. She thought dragging me into court on our anniversary with some vague emergency motion was going to upset me. Was she really that fucking clueless? Did she think I was sitting home pining for her 3 months after our divorce was finalized? I'd gotten what I wanted from her out of our divorce. My freedom and liberal shared custody of our son. Whether or not he was my biological child didn't change the way I felt about him. He was my son. No paternity test was going to tell me otherwise. The smartest thing Alexa had ever done was not fight me on shared custody. After I offered to pay a hefty monthly child support, even though technically I could have probably paid nothing, she was suddenly amicable to sharing custody. Money was all my ex-wife was ever interested in. Even while I was married to her, I think I knew the truth down deep. I'd called her to find out what the fuck she was up to half a dozen times, but of course she didn't answer. The manipulative side of her had reared its ugly head in the days since I'd packed her bags and had them moved to a rental a few blocks away. A rental I still footed the bill for. If it weren't for Beck, I would have tossed her shit out the window when I changed the locks. But I wanted my son close to me, and he didn't deserve to live in a tenement Alexa could barely afford. New Year's Eve, what poor schlep are you beating up and leaving miserable to start a new year? George, the court officer at the entrance to the family court, joked as he scanned my ID. He did side work for Roman, covering surveillance stakeouts at night, and we'd become friends over the last year. This poor schlep. Ex-wife's still a bitch. He nodded, having heard all about my fucked up situation over beers with Roman one night. Handing back my ID, he asked, "You going to Roman's party tonight? Looking forward to it. See you there. Good luck today." Alexa and her dirtbag lawyer, Wade Garrison, were already sitting in the courtroom when I walked in. It was difficult not to laugh at her knee-length skirt and neckline that looked like it might choke her, especially since I had 1,000 photos of her out partying on weekends wearing skin-tight skirts that barely covered her ass and displaying enough cleavage to be mistaken for a hooker. They were compliments of Roman after she and I had split up, in case I needed them someday. My ex-wife kept her face straight ahead, refusing to look at me. If there was one thing I knew about Alexa, it was that she avoided my eyes when she was being over-the-top cuntly. The court officer called our docket number, and I made sure to go ahead of them so I could open the gate and force eye contact with Alexa. "You wearing that to the frat party you're going to tonight?" I whispered. "Might want to put on a better bra. Your tits are looking saggy. Probably from breastfeeding." She glared at me. I smiled wide. "What do we have here, folks? I read the motion and have no idea why you were standing before me today wasting my precious time," Judge Hixton said. "I'd like to know why we're here as well," I added. Judge Hixton turned his attention to the other side of his courtroom. "Why don't you enlighten both of us, counselor?" Garrison cleared his fat throat. How the hell could he talk with that collar button so tight? Looked like he needed to move up from a 23-inch neck to a 24. "Your Honor, we actually have an amended petition we'd like to submit, along with an affidavit from New York Laboratory." The judge motioned for the court officer to collect the documents. "Have these been served on opposing counsel?" "No, Your Honor. The affidavit was just received late last night. We have a set for Mr. Jagger there as well." The court officer distributed the documents to me, as well as Judge Hixton, and we both took a moment to read through them. I skipped the amended petition and paternity lab results, and went right to the third-party affidavit. I only had to read the first half-page. "We, Alexa Thompson Jagger, and Levi Archer Bodine, have read and understand the consequences, alternatives, rights, and responsibilities regarding this affidavit, and being duly sworn upon oath to pose and say, I, Alexa Thompson Jagger, am the biological mother of Beckett Archer Jagger, as documented in New York Live Birth Certificate Number NYC 2839992. I, Levi Archer Bodine, am the biological father of Beckett Archer Jagger, the child referred to in New York Laboratory Case Number 80499F. Wherefore, paternity has been established by Levi Archer Bodine with a scientific certainty of at least 99.99%. Therefore, together we wish for a correction of the birth certificate to identify Levi Bodine as the father. We also wish to pursue full parental rights, including shared custody and visitation. Judge Hixton's voice was sympathetic when he spoke. Mr. Jagger, would you like a few days to respond to this motion? My heart was heavy with anger and sorrow. It felt like my entire world had just been ripped out from under me. I cleared my throat to fight back tears. "Please, Your Honor." Everything that came after that happened in a fog. Garrison asked for temporary visitation for Bodine, which the judge declined in order to allow me time to review the legitimacy of the testing presented. A date to reconvene was set for 2 weeks from Tuesday, and then the gavel slammed down. I was still standing in place after Alexa and her attorney exited the courtroom. Levi Archer Bodine. The man had the same middle name as our son. Alexa had picked the fucking middle name. I'd suggested that we use one of our father's names, but she'd insisted she loved the middle name Archer. She'd always dreamed of giving her little boy the middle name Archer. Fucking liar. But why was his name so goddamn familiar? Levi Archer Bodine. Levi Archer Bodine. Levi Bodine. I knew it from somewhere. Eventually, the court officer came over and quietly told me I needed to leave so we could call the next case. Stunned, I made my way through the courthouse. I passed a handful of people I knew and ignored them. I heard their voices, but couldn't make out what they were saying. It wasn't until I walked outside into the fresh, crisp air that my fog lifted, which was perfect timing to watch Alexa get into a bright yellow Dodge Charger with the number 9 painted on the side. Chapter 28. Your client should be more worried about losing her medical license than a timeshare in the Virgin Islands. Her patient videotaped her bent over the examining table as he gave her a rectal exam with his dick, Alan. When we're dividing up assets, consider that video one of mine. My client spent $20,000 burying that video, but I'd say the value is 100 times that in this room. I was sitting in my conference room negotiating a settlement with opposing attorney Alan Avery. We'd done enough cases together for him to know I wasn't bluffing. Roman had found out a sex tape existed even before the good Dr. Appleton knew about it. And now Mr. Appleton wanted alimony and all of the marital assets. But Alan's focus wasn't on the possible repercussions of that tape. His mind seemed somewhere else entirely. And when I turned to look over my shoulder to see what he was watching, I was pissed about more than just him wasting my time. "She your new secretary?" he asked. Emery stood at the end of the hall, signing for a package from UPS. Her ass looked phenomenal in a tan, form-fitting skirt. "No, she's a subtenant for a while," I said curtly. "Married? Can we get back to the settlement?" I slammed my file shut. "My client isn't giving Dr. Dick up the ass one damn cent." "That's ridiculous. Her husband has been mooching off her for years. She paid for all the joint assets they have with proceeds from her medical practice." "Yeah, well, tell her we said thank you for the parting gifts. She can earn some more. I'm sure she's a very popular proctologist." "She's an ENT." "Really?" "Video looks more like she specializes in rectal exams." "Speaking of assholes, what crawled up yours this morning? You're in a mood." "Let's just get this crap done. I have a busy afternoon," I grumbled. A few minutes later, Emery knocked on the open door. "I'm sorry to interrupt, but you have a phone call, Drew? She claims it's urgent." "Who is it?" Emery was hesitant. "I don't know. She wouldn't give her name." "Tell her I'll call her back. It's obviously not so important if she won't even tell you her name." Emery locked eyes with me. "The caller has a strong southern accent. I thought perhaps Georgia?" "Great. Fucking Alexa." I stood and spoke to Alan. "Excuse me for a minute." "Take your time. Your new tenant and I can get to know each other while you're gone." "Just perfect." I didn't stop the door from slamming behind me as I shut myself into my office and picked up the phone. "Drew Jagger."
"The woman who answered the phone is annoying."
I let out an irritated sigh.
"What do you want, Alexa? I'm in the middle of a conference."
"I'm staying in Atlanta another 2 weeks."
"Like hell you are. My visitation starts on Friday, and you've already been there a week longer than the 2 weeks we agreed on. I haven't seen my son in more than 3 weeks.
You can come here for your visit."
"I can't drop everything and fly to Atlanta every other week because you want to play with your friends. Beck needs to be home, back in school, and back to his routine."
"He also needs to get to know his father."
I knew exactly what she meant. Fuck you, Alexa. He knows his father. His biological father. Levi wants to get to know him. It's important. I felt the rise of my blood pressure. Really? If it's so important, why didn't you tell him 7 fucking years ago when you found out you were pregnant? And why hasn't he made an attempt to know our son when he's known the truth for more than 2 years now? Not to mention, has he started paying support yet? I wasted the next 10 minutes of my life in another useless argument with Alexa. For Beck's benefit, I stretched my patience as thin as it could possibly go and didn't hang up on her. I didn't trust my ex-wife to not play the only card she had left in her very worn deck, taking me back to court to reduce my visitation. Even after paternity had been proven and Levi's name replaced mine on my son's birth certificate, her redneck ex-boyfriend had never attempted to get to know Beck. We'd settled out of court on the custody arrangement, and I'd agreed to pay hefty additional alimony and child support, even though I could have made a motion to stop support once paternity was disproved. But in the back of my mind, I was always waiting for the other shoe to drop, especially now that she was apparently speaking to Levi again. My son still had no idea who the man was. Knowing how vindictive Alexa could be kept me from doing a lot of things I wanted to do to make her life miserable, like hanging up on her today. After a minute of silence, Alexa finally got to the point she'd been calling to make. I kicked myself for taking the argument bait she'd set for me. If you feel that strongly about Beck coming back to New York, I suppose we could work something out. What do you want, Alexa? Well, Levi has a big race coming up next week, and I want to be here for it. For some reason, I didn't harbor the same anger toward Levi as I did Alexa. A part of me actually felt bad for the idiot. She'd blown the sucker off. Referred to him as a grease monkey, if I remembered correctly, in favor of snagging herself a husband with a fatter bank account. But now that the grease monkey was a sponsored driver on the NASCAR circuit, he was suddenly good enough to speak to again. Is there a point to this story? Well, it does get loud at the races anyway. I suppose if you wanted to fly down here and take Beck back with you for the week, I could stay down here alone before coming back to New York. Although I'm running a little short on cash right now, and I'd need some extra spending money to travel to see the race. I wanted to tell her to go fuck herself, but instead I said, I'll get tickets for me and Beck. I'll text you the time my flight gets in, and you'll bring him to the airport to meet me. You're getting 1,000 cash, and don't call me for more. Fine. After I hung up, I sat at my desk for another minute, trying to compose myself. That woman made me want to drink hard liquor before lunch. The extra minute or two helped just slightly, although whatever anger I'd managed to tamp down bubbled back to the surface when I returned to the conference room and found Alan still chatting with Emery. She was laughing at something he just said. Finish so soon? Don't you have any more calls you need to make? Emery and I were just getting to know each other. Maybe you should have spent the last 15 minutes figuring out how your client is going to pay your bill when I leave her with nothing but her medical license. Glad to see your call has improved your mood, Jagger. I grumbled something along the lines of stick it up your ass and went to sit back down. Drew, Emery said, before you get back to work, can I speak to you for a minute? I nodded and followed her into her office. She shut the door behind us. Alan seems nice. He's a womanizer. I actually had no idea if he was, it just came out. Emery smiled. I can see why. He's handsome, too. I glared at her. You want to fuck Alan? Would that make you angry? Are you kidding me right now? Because I just hung up with my ex-wife, and I'm already in a piss-poor mood without you telling me you're interested in the first guy who walked into the office after you got up out of my bed this morning. Emery walked to her desk and leaned one hip against it. Keep that feeling. We'll put it to good use later. I was on her in 2 seconds flat, my fingers pressed into her hips as I sandwiched her between my body and her desk. Cute. You want an angry fuck? I'm more than willing to accommodate right now. Alan is waiting for you. Alan can listen to you scream my name while I bury my cock inside you. The urge hit me like a brick wall, and suddenly my mouth was crushed to hers. I swallowed the sound of her gasp as one hand slid up from her hip and palmed her breast through her shirt. When her hands reached around and grabbed my ass, my other hand went to her neck, so I could tilt her head to just the right angle and make her open wider for me. She smelled incredible.
Her skin pebbled beneath my fingers, and her hot mouth tasted so fucking good. We were both panting when the kiss broke. Emery looked a little stunned, and I felt a bit drugged. "What's your schedule this afternoon?" She thought for a moment. "Last counseling is a video session from 3 to 4. You?" "Be in my office at 4:01. Our kiss had smeared her lipstick. I used my thumb to wipe it from